I again appreciate the opportunity to be here with you and to share just a couple more things. When Ray first gave me these topics, two things hit me. These all sound really similar. Number three, I'm really glad. A lot of times, a faith that dies, a faith that survives, a faith that thrives, you could put that title on several of these things, but Ray said, I trust that you'll take it in a direction that that you know that they need. And I'm always grateful for that too, because when you are bound to something so specific, you don't have a lot of room to wiggle around. But the way that I wanted to progress this was to discuss the basics of the things that keep us from dying. But it's not enough just to keep from dying. You want to be able to survive the other things that come along. But then surviving is not really even the goal, is it? There was a man who, during the Cold War, he had decided he didn't want to go to war. And so in Russia, his parents hid him in a barn. And when they came by to recruit, they hid him underneath a pile of manure, which with a straw or whatever, I don't know exactly what kind of straw, but something for him to breathe through so that he could breathe in that. And they checked around everywhere for everyone. No, there's no one here to be recruited. And so they left. But in order for his family and friends to know that he was gone and the story they had told, he had to remain hidden in the barn. And after a couple of years living there, he ran out and they said, get back in. They're going to see you. If you don't get back in there, you're not going to survive. And he said, I don't want to survive. I want to live. There's a major difference in that, isn't there? We don't want a faith that just survives, that is hanging all of the time. We're always growing. We're always learning. But we want a faith that lives. And a faith that thrives. When I think about the word thrive means to grow rapidly and to do well. And I want to look at something in a little different light, because we've talked about a lot of the ways that we can help our faith to survive. But it's more than my efforts. It's more than my efforts. There is a social syndrome that has been going around for the past several years where people, bizarrely enough, I don't know if you've heard about this happening, people are stealing baby Jesuses from nativity scenes. Have you heard of that? You read it on the news where people are doing that? They're going around and they're stealing them. It's a social trend where sometimes they're doing it for fun, just to see which ones they can steal and get away with. Sometimes they find them and they return them with satanic symbols and different things on them. Sometimes people do it to protest Christmas. So they do it for various reasons. But either way, everywhere, baby Jesuses are disappearing from these different nativity scenes. A couple of years ago, a church in Wellington, Florida, had their baby Jesus stolen 2 years in a row. And this is a wealthy neighborhood whose baby Jesus cost $1,800. I barely had the guts to pay that for my own children. No, I'm kidding. But Liam stayed over in the NICU, and it was funny because he had trouble breathing, and we got his bill. His bill paying off the NICU took a little bit longer. And I remember the day we were sitting in the living room and Sarah said, she was doing the checkbook and she said that we just paid off Liam. And it's like we owned him now. He's finally ours. He finally belongs to us, like paying off a house. He's our property now. But, you think about this $1,800 Jesus. They finally got smart and put a GPS in the infant Christ and followed it to the elderly lady's home who was stealing it. And, of course, she was in a lot of trouble. It doesn't have to be $1,800 for somebody to steal it. In 2008, in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, somebody took this, it's a plastic baby doll Jesus, along with the chain and concrete block meant to keep that from happening. They were desperate to steal this one. But then sometimes they don't take it out of malintent. There was a boy at the Art Institute in Chicago who was arrested for stealing one just out there in the plaza. Two witnesses saw him just walk by, pick it up, and keep moving. And he didn't even try to get away with it. And they asked him why, and he said it was so beautiful, he just couldn't not have it. So for many reasons, people are stealing these. And it's a bizarre trend. But when I read this, I thought something about my life. I have stolen Jesus from so many scenes in my life. You see, I tend to label the things that I do as a product of my efforts, as a product of the efforts of people around me, as a product of natural occurrence, all the while forgetting sometimes to give God the glory for it, or forgetting sometimes that He was behind the efforts. And in doing so, I literally have stolen Him from so many scenes in which He should have been glorified. But here's the danger in that. It's not just the danger of Him not getting the glory. When we forget God as the author of the things that we do, when we forget that He is the source of power that drives the things we do beyond what we can do, we will start to hope for less. We'll start to pray for less. We will start to believe less. Why? Because when I see the things I do as a product of my own efforts, well, I can't do a whole lot. If I'm honest with myself, I may have a lot of capabilities, but when compared to knowing that God is also joining me in the effort, well, I can hope for a whole lot less because I can't really do a whole lot without Him. And so to steal God away from it means you're going to attempt less. You're going to hope for less. You're going to pray for less. I'm not talking about putting God back into things so you can just get whatever you want and get more of it. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about praying for more and serving more and doing bigger things because we don't underestimate the God who is answering back. We've talked a lot about, again, the ways, the things we put into it, but I want us to remember that a faith that thrives, that's going to grow rapidly, I think about growing rapidly, I think about the vine, Christ, who without a full reliance on Him, our faith may survive, but it won't thrive in the way that it needs to. It's really Him who has the power behind it. Look at John 15, 1. John 15, 1. Christ says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, He takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, He prunes that it may bear more fruit. You're already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit. Without me, you can do nothing. Does that statement seem huge to you? For without me, you can do nothing. When we think about everything that we do, even when it's apart from things we might consider spiritual, all of those things, Christ upholds all things. He created all things. He has given us life and every breath. There is nothing I do without Christ. Not only because of the reliance that I have on Him, but because my very existence is reliant upon Him. But then when we decide to abide in Him, it goes so much more, goes further than just living and existing because of His power. But because we abide in Him and Him in us, we do much for Him and bear much fruit. We don't always take big risks. We don't always jump out there, serve others, do good things, and pray for big things to happen because we don't always really think that they can. My efforts feel insignificant sometimes. I mean, look at big-name preachers and see the Billy Smiths of the world and the Roy Sharps of the world. They're out there converting so many people and preaching in these huge auditoriums to you. And I look at missionaries like my father-in-law who move over to Africa and convert the masses in a loincloth. And I think, okay, maybe not that far. But I think about all of these various people who do so many big things like that. And I think, well, that's not me. I don't have the ability to do all of those things. And I look at my own efforts. And even though I feel like I'm doing something for Christ, it doesn't seem like maybe as much as others. But let me tell you something. It's not them either. And if you ask them, they'll tell you the same. That everything that they do, everything that they accomplish for Christianity, in the end, it is Christ. And it's through His power that these things take place. Ephesians 3, 20 through 21 says, who is able to do exceedingly, abundantly above all we ask or think, through the power that works in us, to Him be the glory in the churches in Christ Jesus, through all generations. We had a VBS a couple of years ago called the Time Machine. And me and my dad is, again, so good at doing everything. And he built this huge time machine out of plywood, and we painted it. It had a huge anchor on the front of it to open, and we had the lights on it. It had a smoke machine he installed in it because he doesn't do anything on a small scale. So we had this time machine with a trap door in the back. So Scott and I, the youth minister, we would appear every night, and we would get inside this time machine, and the lights would go off, and the sounds and everything, and we would sneak out the back door. And then Ed, the previous preacher there, would come by, and he would open the door of the time machine, and nothing but smoke would come out, and we'd be gone. And then a video would appear on screen with us having transported back into biblical times, and we would be there with Christ or with telephone wires in the background of the video as well. We realized that halfway through, that the children didn't notice the inaccuracies of biblical times. But what was the most interesting about that time machine was that the kids afterwards would come up and they had to pass the time machine to go through to the back pavilion to get their snacks. And so some of the kids passed it like this because they're afraid that they're going to get sucked into this time machine and it's going to send them back in time like it did us. Some of them wanted to touch it, but they couldn't make themselves do it. They would get near, they couldn't do it. You see, the author Mark Batterson, I like to read, he inspires me in a lot of ways, once observed that the beauty of childhood is that you don't know what can't happen. Those children had no idea that that piece of wood could not send them back into time. And so because of that, they believed in it. Isn't that a good definition of faith? You know you have faith when you don't know what can't happen. The disciples had been with Jesus for 3 years, and they had seen him do so many things that by the time he was done walking with them, they didn't know what couldn't happen. And so they didn't always put limits on God. And they, because of that, they attempted huge things, and God did amazing things through them. Sometimes we pray often, we serve often, but we never really know if God answers our prayers or blesses our work. And sometimes it's because I always pray for things and serve in ways that technically could have been accomplished just by human hands. So I never really take a risk big enough to incur and need God's power in order to make that happen. D.L. Moody, the evangelist, suggested a remedy for that. He said, attempt something so great for God that it is doomed to fail unless God be in it. And when one of those things happens, well, then you'll know. A faith that thrives is one that's going to allow Christ to work beyond us and give him the glory for that. Let me take some pressure off of you. You're going to strike out with your prayer requests sometimes. You're going to strike out with your service attempts. You're going to strike out with your outreach because people aren't going to want to listen. But those things won't happen that you asked for because God has something different or better in mind. So here's some advice. Go down swinging. A faith that thrives goes down swinging. And you'll get discouraged in these things, and I get discouraged, but we keep praying, and we keep hoping, and we keep serving. Because when it's not really you behind the bat, well, then you can tell the world's outfielders to back up. But the only way that that happens is when you do what you do, and you allow God to take it past the circumstances that you cannot. But are you willing to let him do that? You see, here's the catch, is that in order to bear fruit and allow him to take it past those circumstances, you got to be connected to the vine. Are you? If you're not, if you haven't put on Christ in baptism, if you haven't been forgiven of your sins and been reconnected with God, well, then you can expect for your life to be a product of the things that you do. But if you want God on your team, he's here and ready at any moment. We extend that invitation to you, but also if you have been connected to the vine, but maybe you're not bearing fruit, maybe you've grown stale in your life, or maybe you're not moving and thriving in the direction that you want to. I'll close. Let me examine your life in this way. Our lives are like an elevator, and we get in, and we're trying to reach the top. And as we get in, we go up different floors at different stages of life, but sometimes they stop. And they stop because they reach the weight capacity. Because we let people in that shouldn't be in there. We let things in that shouldn't be in there. We let other influences in that shouldn't be in there. And by the time we've let all these things in, it stops and we don't move any further. And so we have to reach a point where we decide what gets in and what gets out. And sometimes we have to decide that this person in my life, no matter how much I love them, no matter how much I want them here, no matter how much fun they are, no matter the kinds of connections or the emotional investment I have, they're not good for me. Or they're bringing me down to a different level no matter how much I have tried. Or this habit in my life keeps me from growing any further. And as much as I've relied on it and I don't know what I'm going to be able to do without it or whether or not God really can fill that hole when I let it go, I know that it's keeping me back. And so we have to open the door and say, this is your floor. You've been with me for a long time, but you got to get out here because I'm going to the top and I can't go any further with you in here. Is there something in your elevator that needs to get out? If there is, what better opportunity to let all of these people in here that God's put in your life help pray for you and bring that before God? This evening, if you need to respond to the invitation, won't you do that right now?
Had it not been the Lord who was on our side, had it not been the Lord who was on our side, the anger of the enemy would have swallowed us alive. The Lord who was on our side. Blessed be the Lord who would not give us up. Blessed be the Lord for His unfailing love. The snare is broken and we have escaped. Our help is in the name of the Lord. Blessed be the Lord. Had it not been the Lord who was on our side, had it not been the Lord who was on our side, the waters would have engulfed us, we would have surely died. Had it not been the Lord who was on our side, blessed be the Lord who would not give us up. Blessed be the Lord for His unfailing love. The snare is broken and we have escaped. Our help is in the name of the Lord. Blessed be the Lord who would not give us up. Blessed be the Lord for His unfailing love. The snare is broken and we have escaped. Our help is in the name of the Lord. Blessed be the Lord.